Welcome to the February 2nd service of the Unitarian Universalist Congregation in Blacksburg, Virginia. Our service today is led by our minister, Reverend Pam Phillips, and the title of her sermon is Rehearsing Resilience. The podcast begins with a reading read by Worship Associate David Lally.
Our reading today is Snowflakes, A Guide, by Reverend Teresa Innes Soto. How do we spring back into shape after a long week, an election season that drags, a broken heart that's still not healed, raw but beating? No duct tape will cover those cracks. No glue will mend the gap. Some people think they can shame you, make you small by calling you a snowflake. What they don't know is this. The snow is bright because the lines and lacy edges, the crystals stacked, reflect back the light shone down on them. And the light keeps shining just as you do. In this community, you choose each other. You insist on blazing brilliant. Your unique configuration in the universe's expression of what it means to be alive. And together, many snowflakes make a mountain. You return to knowing yourself and being yourself by the clarity of that reflection. You can lay your burdens down and rest. Lean into the place where you belong. Allow the brightness of who you are, both individually and community, to light the way toward the future. You are building with your love.
How do we spring back? That's one way of thinking about resilience, the theme we'll be exploring this month. Springing back after a particularly draining or traumatic time in our life. I'm guessing that some of us are wondering that right about now. How do we spring back? If not from a personal loss or difficulty, and I know we have them, then from the proceedings up in Washington, D.C. No matter your particular political persuasion, the impeachment hearings have been tough. Yes? If you're like me and a little bit of a news junkie, then you've been listening to or watching the presentations and the questions. And it was hard. I admit to muting the TV a few times when I just couldn't listen anymore. And while there hasn't been much suspense, it seemed pretty much a foregone conclusion that there wouldn't be more witnesses. And I don't expect the vote on Wednesday will be much of a surprise. It has been difficult to witness the effects of such stark political division. And this feels different than the last two impeachments, at least in my lifetime. Some of you may not have been around for the last one. Maybe even the last two. How old am I? Some of us remember those impeachments, yes? But this one seems different. It seems to be eating away at the foundation of our democracy, the whole separation of powers and checks and balances the framers of our Constitution intentionally designed that we all learned about in civics class. It seems different this time. So how do we spring back? Now, for those of you who are getting nervous that today is going to be all about politics, let me reassure you. But it feels disingenuous to pretend that what's happening in Washington, D.C. isn't happening. And research shows, and our experience tells us, that ignoring our troubles doesn't make them go away. Sometimes the world out there intrudes in here. Sometimes the world out there is the reason we gather in here. Because at times when we most need to be resilient, we need to be together. And research also shows that a network of supportive friends and family is vital in helping us to cope. That network of support helps us spring back. Knowing that we all experience times of trouble, that we all need resilience, the question is, what can we do to prepare for those times? Is there anything we can do to get ready before we get sprung out of shape? And as the title of the sermon suggests, the answer is yes. When the worship team met last month to discuss resilience, we talked about teaching resilience. And David followed up by sending us several articles explaining how to teach it. One was hugely long, and I wish I'd had it when I was a middle school teacher. It turns out that some people are naturally more resilient than others. They seem particularly adept at springing back to shape. But all kinds of factors come into play when it comes to how well we cope with adversity. The circumstances of the situation, the inner resources we bring to bear, and the level of support we seek, find, and accept. Our resiliency can vary throughout our lives. So knowing that, we can, in fact, fill up our resilience reservoirs ahead of time and use some of the same strategies when we're in the middle of those difficult times. So much of the research that David shared, and really about resilience in particular, is how to teach it is centered on children. And those of us who grew up a while ago probably have some opinions about how children today don't have as many natural lessons about overcoming adversity. It seems to be a generational thing. Kids today have it soft. Back in my day, to get to school, we walked 10 miles uphill in the snow, both ways. Barefoot. Oh, barefoot? Somebody had it worse than me. I didn't ride a bus to school until I was in ninth grade. I walked to kindergarten by myself. And here I am. You've probably heard all about helicopter parents who hover around their kids, making sure that nothing goes wrong. But that's for another day. I wanted to concentrate today on what we grown-ups can do, and was intrigued by a New York Times article by Tara Parker Pope called How to Build Resilience in Midlife. So you youngsters, just think ahead to the future. Likewise, an article by Kira Newman, Five Science-Backed Strategies to Build Resilience, in the Greater Good magazine that comes out of UC Berkeley's Greater Good Science Center, proved to be a treasure trove of strategies. If you ever get a chance to go to the website, it's great. And it's science-based. This is stuff that has all kinds of research. I put links to both of those articles in the email that Lisa sends out this afternoon so that if anything kind of piques your interest, you can look it up. Now, many of the strategies have to do with how we think about ourselves, the world, and the situation at hand. One of the first strategies is practicing optimism. Now, this doesn't mean ignoring the reality of a situation, but framing it in as positive way as possible. Now, I find that when I'm in the middle of a hard time, someone says to me, look on the bright side. Yes, I want to punch them. Don't... That was Molly's. Okay. But we can practice ahead of time with a strategy they called finding silver linings. So this is something you can do before tragedy strikes. They say, start by listing five things that make you feel like your life is enjoyable, enriching, or worthwhile at this moment. So think about something that's making your life worthwhile right now. They say it can be something as general as being in good health, or as specific as drinking a delicious cup of tea this morning. This first step helps shift into a positive state of mind about your life in general. So think about one good thing. All right, I see some smiles. Yes? All right. Next, think about the most recent time when something didn't go your way, or when you felt frustrated, irritated, or upset. And they ask you to write it down in a few sentences. Then list three things that can help you see the bright side of this situation. For example, if you miss the bus in the morning, three ways to look on the bright side of the situation might be, even though you missed the bus, you got some good exercise while you were running after the bus. You're fortunate to live in a city where there's another bus in 10 minutes, or the buses are reliable, or there is a bus. And this is my favorite. 10 years from now, you likely won't remember what happened this morning. We had to practice that this morning. This morning, my husband hit the button on the coffee maker. Coffee is one of my things. And realized he hadn't put the coffee grounds in the coffee maker. It gave me a good laugh. And it feels good to laugh first thing in the morning. They said in a 2014 study, doing this practice daily for 3 weeks helped participants become more engaged with life afterward, and it decreased their pessimistic beliefs over time. I know some Eeyores in the world. Do you? I would love to see if this would work for them. You can become a Tigger instead of an Eeyore. Another strategy is to rewrite your story or change the narrative. When something bad happens, we often replay it in our minds over and over and over again. Does that sound familiar to anyone? It makes me think of 9/11. Every time I turned on the TV, I saw replayed over and over again the scene with the planes and the towers. It was exhausting. It's called ruminating, and we all do it. But it can prevent us from moving forward. So a strategy they cite is expressive writing, just simply taking 20 minutes to free write what you think and what you feel about the situation. And it can help change the narrative, because in their words, in writing, the researchers suggest, we're forced to confront ideas one by one and give them structure, which may lead to new perspectives. We're actually crafting our own life narrative and gaining a sense of control. Yeah, when you write it down, you control the narrative. Likewise, just telling ourselves that a difficult situation might be an opportunity to learn and grow can help. Ever since I went to seminary, when something bad happens in my life, my friends and I often say, well, there's a sermon in there somewhere. The stories we tell ourselves are so powerful. Another strategy is not personalizing it. Sheryl Sandberg wrote a book called Option B with psychologist Adam Grant. You may have heard of Sheryl Sandberg. She works at Facebook, and she wrote a book called Lean In. I've just started this book, but it's really powerful. Her husband died tragically and in a surprise way. He had a cardiac arrhythmia. But one of the things she says is after he died, she blamed herself for not getting him to eat more healthy or for not noticing symptoms of his heart disease. And she blamed herself for the disruption in her life, in her family's life, in her workmate's life. She kept finding herself saying, I'm sorry, I'm sorry. My dad did the same thing when he was sick last year. He got diagnosed, and Almost every time I talked to him on the phone, he said, "I'm so sorry. It's not your fault." But we personalize things when things go wrong in our lives. And even if we made mistakes when something terrible happens, there are so many factors that contribute to the situation. And blaming ourselves doesn't help us move on. So practicing self-compassion is an antidote to personalizing. When we catch ourselves blaming or beating ourselves up for not handling difficult situations as well as we'd like, we can extend the same kind of compassion to ourselves as we would to a friend. The Greater Good article provides three different practices of self-compassion, one of which is the self-compassion break, something you can do anytime you start to feel overwhelmed by pain or stress. It has three steps, which correspond to the three aspects of self-compassion. The first is be mindful. Without judgment or analysis, notice that you're feeling. Say, "This is a moment of suffering," or "This hurts," or "This is stress." Just naming it. The second is remember that you're not alone. Everyone experiences these deep and painful human emotions, although the causes might be different. Say to yourself, "Suffering is a part of life," or "We all feel this way sometimes. We all struggle in our lives." And the third is be kind to yourself. Put your hands on your heart and say something like, "May I give myself compassion. May I accept myself as I am. May I be patient." Be mindful, remember that you're not alone, and be kind to yourself. This part is important. Put your hands on your heart. Be compassionate to yourself. And you can remember your comebacks. One of the advantages we have as adults over children and youth is that most of us can look back at times when we've sprung back after difficult times. As someone in the worship team, I think it might have been Victoria, said, "Resilience is a gift from living a hard life." Was it you? Was it you? Someone in the universe said, "Resilience is a gift from living a hard life." And while it is helpful to think about other people who have faced what you're facing, knowing that someone else has done what you're trying to do, that is helpful. Apparently, you will get a bigger resilience boost by reminding yourself of the challenges that you personally have overcome. Think back. I survived that thing, so I can survive this thing. So most of these strategies are about how we think about adversity, but it's good to get out of our heads and to do something. Part of what's so hard about the difficult times in our lives is that we feel we have no control. Doing anything at all feels good. So while getting support from a strong network is vital, it turns out that it is better to give than to receive. Dr. Stephen Southwick, a psychiatry professor at Yale Medical School, explains, "Any way you can reach out and help other people is a way of moving outside of yourself. And this is an important way to enhance your own strength. Part of resilience is taking responsibility for your life and for creating a life that you consider meaningful and purposeful. It doesn't have to be a big mission. It could be your family. As long as what you're involved in has meaning to you, that can push you through all sorts of adversity." So doing supporting others is a way to build up your resilience. Another active way of building up our resilience seems pretty obvious, but I really like the way it's framed in the New York Times article, and it is to take stress breaks. It makes sense to give ourselves a break when we're under a lot of stress by taking a walk or meditating, whatever it is that you do, to just try to get away from the stress. But when you take that break, it isn't just relieving stress. It's making space for recovery. Jack Grapple, the co-founder of the Johnson & Johnson Human Performance Institute, compares it to resting your muscles in between weightlifting repetitions. How many weightlifters out there? Anyone ever done that? So we can't build our muscles by constantly lifting weights. If we just kept doing it, it would break down the muscles, right? Our muscles need the recovery period if they're going to get stronger. Likewise, we can't build up resilience if we're constantly under stress. Taking stress breaks helps to build the resilience muscle. So taking breaks isn't a luxury, it's a necessity. So it's important to be intentional about scheduling those breaks. I'm not a huge weightlifter, obviously. I mean, there was a time in my life when I did lift weights kind of a lot. But the idea of resilience being the same way, that it needs that recovery time, for some reason that really resonated for me. And I love the idea of having resilience muscle. An even more positive and proactive way to build resilience is the final strategy. Go out of your comfort zone. Resilience doesn't just come from negative experience. You can build your resilience by putting yourself in challenging situations. So in the article, they gave examples like climbing Mount Kilimanjaro. Has anyone ever done that in here? Any mountain climbers? Taking an adventure vacation. Running a triathlon. Anyone here done that? Oh, yes. Or participating in a poetry slam. It doesn't have to be a physical activity. Just something challenging. Can you think of something you could do that would take you out of your comfort zone, but would be fun or exciting? Yes? Not terrible. I love the idea of choosing to put ourselves under stress, positive stress, as a way of building resilience. Because when we do, our stress hormone systems will become less responsive to stress, so we can handle it better. So that's something you all should be thinking about this week. Think of some adventure, some positive, stressful situation you can put yourself into. Can you think of something? Doing what?
Going to a bar.
Going to a bar? No. That would be a stressful situation, but I'm not sure. Well, I guess if it's out of your comfort zone. Well, I like the thing that Kimberly was talking about, finding a circle where you feel like you can be connected. That might be a stressful situation. Here's a secret. The first time I ever went to a Unitarian Universalist congregation, it was in White Plains, New York. And it took me weeks to build up the courage to go. It was outside my comfort zone. I feel so resilient just thinking about it. How do we spring back? It turns out there are all kinds of ways we can help ourselves spring back from adversity by thinking and acting in ways that build up our resilience muscles. In addition to those I lifted up this morning, I'm guessing you all have other strategies that have worked for you. And Each month, I've been sharing one of the spiritual exercises from our Soul Matters small group ministry packets for you to consider trying, whether you're in a small group or not. So one of these exercises encourages us to bring our resiliency tools into greater awareness. So here's how you do it. You take some time to list the five top resiliency practices and habits that you've used. So here's some examples that they gave. Getting 8 hours of sleep, getting some exercise every day, creating external order by organizing the junk drawer or cleaning the fridge. Someone needs to do that today. Making sure there's a veggie on every plate I eat, meditating 3 mornings a week, making my bed, taking a once-a-week email Sabbath, having family dinners with a family gratitude prayer, spending time with animals, knitting, watching The Daily Show. So think about your five top resiliency habits or skills. And then think about them more deeply by asking yourself these questions. Which resiliency practice is saving you right now? Which one have you let slide and need to start doing more of again? Which one was given to you by someone else? Which one did you discover on your own? And which one do you need to pass on to someone else? And then share your list with a family member or friend. So that's another assignment for you. And finally, you should have found a small purple card in your order of service. All right? So, as I explained in my newsletter article, and I know you all read the newsletter, the Connections Committee is inviting us all to spread some love for the month of February. Appropriate not only because of Valentine's Day, but because February 17th is Random Acts of Kindness Day. So, supporting others is a way to build up our resilience. So find opportunities to do simple acts of kindness to people and then hand the card to them and invite them to pass it forward, to spread the love. How do we spring back? In the words of Reverend Soto, allow the brightness of who you are, both individual and community, to light the way toward the future. You are building with your love. So let's go out and build the future with our love. Amen.